Welcome to Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Jessica Hergert. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Bradley J. Monk, MD, FACS, FACOG, Professor in the Division of Gynecologic Oncology at Arizona College, U.S. Oncology Network, University of Arizona College of Medicine, Creighton University School of Medicine at St. Joseph's Hospital, Medical Director of the Gynecologic Program at U.S. Oncology Research Network, and Co-Director of GOG Partners, to contextualize recent breakthroughs in cervical cancer, including a newly FDA-approved agent and practice-changing research that was presented at the 2021 ESMO Congress. On September 20, 2021, the FDA granted an accelerated approval to tisotumab vedotin for the treatment of patients with recurrent or metastatic cervical cancer with disease progression on or after chemotherapy. The regulatory decision is based on findings from the Phase 2 INOVA-TV-204 trial, in which the antibody-drug conjugate led to an objective response rate of 24% per independent review committee using RECIST version 1.1 criteria in patients with recurrent or metastatic cervical cancer who received prior doublet chemotherapy and bevacizumab. Among those who responded to treatment, 7% experienced a complete response and 17% had a partial response. The median duration of response with tisotumab vedotin was 8.3 months. The median time to response with the antibody-drug conjugate was 1.4 months, and activity was reported within the first two cycles of treatment. At the 2021 ESMO Congress, interim findings from the Phase 3 KEYNOTE-826 trial demonstrated that the addition of pembrolizumab to chemotherapy, with or without bevacizumab, significantly improved survival and response rates in patients with persistent, recurrent, or metastatic cervical cancer. In the subset of patients with a PD-L1 combined positive score of 1 or higher, the median progression-free survival in the investigative and control arms was 10.4 months versus 8.2 months, respectively. In this group, the median overall survival was not reached at the time of the data cutoff in the investigative arm versus 16.3 months in the control arm. In the all-comer population, the median progression-free survival was 10.4 months in the investigative arm and 8.2 months in the control arm. The median overall survival in this population was 24.4 months with pembrolizumab versus 16.4 months with placebo. In the group of patients who had a PD-L1 combined positive score of 10 or higher, the median progression-free survival with pembrolizumab plus chemotherapy, with or without bevacizumab, was 10.4 months versus 8.1 months with chemotherapy, with or without bevacizumab. The median overall survival was also not reached in the investigative arm versus 16.4 months in the control arm. In our exclusive interview, Monk discussed the significance of the FDA approval of tisotumab vedotin and notable research that was presented at the 2021 ESMO Congress in cervical cancer.
Thank you again, Dr. Monk, for taking the time to speak with me on this episode of Enclave On Air. It's very nice to speak with you again. I know that you're a resident of Enclave On Air, so nice to have you.
Jessica, it's my pleasure. You know, I couldn't be more excited to talk to you about cervical cancer. What we're seeing is unprecedented, not only the results, but the volume of the results over and over again, positive, game-changing opportunities. So I'm happy to talk to you today. Thank you. You know, first of all, I have to say that this is a preventable disease. I think we've learned from COVID that if you don't get vaccinated, you might die. And, you know, the same in cervical cancer. You know, HPV vaccination was launched in 2006. And even today, there really hasn't been the uptake that I would have expected. And as you know, there's now against 9 HPV types, 7 of them cause cancer, 2 of them cause warts, both boys and girls, beginning at age 9 all the way up to 45, although we want to do it when they're young. And it prevents HPV-related head and neck cancer, anal cancer, penile cancer, vulvar vaginal, and of course, cervical cancer. And then if you miss that opportunity to get screened, and you get screened just like you get tested for COVID, you get tested for the virus, and you don't get tested in your nose for cervical cancer. I get it that that's where the coronavirus lives, but you actually get tested in the cervix. So every woman should be vaccinated and know if they're virally negative. And if they're virally negative, they can go for 5 years without a repeat test. So it's hard to imagine, but you know, patients didn't used to get systemic therapy for cervical cancer. It was taught, I was taught that cervical cancer was chemotherapy resistant. And the world really changed in 1999 when multiple papers were published in the New England Journal that said, you should, as a provider, add weekly cisplatin to radiation. And that was actually an alert by the National Cancer Institute, and that changed the world. And even today, that remains the standard of care. And you maybe saw at ASCO that we tried to add additional cycles of carboplatin paclitaxel in the Outback trial, and that didn't work. So we sort of sat there, and in the recurrent setting, we were really unsure what to do until 2009, published in the Journal of Clinical Oncology, GOG-204. And that showed, again, even today, that the chemotherapy backbone should be platinum and taxane. And at the time, it was cisplatin and 24-hour paclitaxel. But our Japanese colleagues at the JCOG also published in the Journal of Clinical Oncology in 2015 that really, you can do carboplatin, not cis, AUC of 5. And really, you want to do 24-hour paclitaxel, you can do 175 per meter squared over 3 hours. And that, again, has remained today. So that was exciting. The first really breakthrough in systemic therapy was bevacizumab, presented at ASCO in 2013. FDA approved in February 2014, published in the New England Journal in 2014, changed the world, that the global standard really for treating cervical cancer in the recurrent or metastatic setting is carboplatin paclitaxel, bevacizumab when you can, and you generally can in about 2/3 of the patients. There are some contraindications and obviously a risk of a vaginal fistula. We sort of sat there, and pembrolizumab got FDA approved through the accelerated approval mechanism of June of 2018, but it was pretty disappointing. It was a 14.3% response rate. It was a small subset, 77 patients. But if you did respond, the duration of response was pretty good. And so that got approved, and we were uncertain, and it was only in a few limited countries. And so we decided to compare immune therapy to physician's choice chemotherapy in the space where pembrolizumab was approved, second line, after failing GOG-240 chemotherapy and bevacizumab. So we did that, and that's cemiplimab. And that study is called GOG-3016, or Cervix Empower 1, and that was presented at Virtual ESMO earlier this year that shows that, look, immune therapy is even better than physician's choice chemotherapy second line. And although the PFS differences are really not that great, there is a long-term effect. There's a tail. There's an overall survival advantage, an improvement in tumor shrinkage. And we didn't really work on the PD-L1 status, but certainly checkpoint inhibitors work if PD-L1 is there, but probably works when PD-L1 is not expressed. And that's a wonderful opportunity. And that was, again, presented at Virtual ESMO this summer. Now at ESMO, we come back and we say, well, look, maybe we should add checkpoint inhibitors in earlier line of therapy. Maybe we should add it to chemotherapy with or without bevacizumab in frontline. Well, maybe we should. Well, we did in 617 patients presented by Nicoletta Colombo, a very positive study where adding pembrolizumab improved every metric, PFS, OS, response rate, regardless of PD-L1 status, because 89% of the patients were PD-L1 positive. So there are very few cervical cancer patients that are PD-L1 negative. And it was so wonderful that the New England Journal prioritized it and published it on the same day, September 18. So you can read that paper in the New England Journal, Keynote 826. I mean, I'm very proud of that accomplishment for patients. So as checkpoint inhibitors move earlier, then what's the second line going to be? Because cemiplimab showed that cemiplimab is a great opportunity second line, and many patients will remain checkpoint naive for many years. But someday, most patients that get to second line, again, we don't count chemotherapy and radiation as a line of therapy. Most patients ultimately, over time, years from now, will have had checkpoint exposure. And that opportunity probably is going to be an antibody drug conjugate. Look, antibody drug conjugates are approved in liquid tumors, breast cancer, uroepithelial cancer, and cervical cancer, incidentally. Incidentally, on September 20th, the FDA gave accelerated approval to tisotumab vedotin, which is an antibody drug conjugate against a ubiquitous tumor-specific antigen known as thromboplastin or tissue factor. 24% response rate. Remember, I told you pembrolizumab got approved with 14%. I want to introduce to you, though, the adverse reactions of special interest related to tisotumab. Bleeding, epistaxis, it can be mitigated with ice packs on the nose, and also neuropathy because the payload is a tubulin active medication, but also some eye challenges. And so what you do is you put that cold pack not only over the noses, but over the eyes. And in fact, before you give the intravenous dose, 2 mg/kg every 3 weeks, you give some vasoconstricting drops so that it isn't delivered to the eyes. And then you also give some anti-inflammatory steroid drops for 3 days. And then you always have some lubricating drops on board because it can cause some dryness. And when you do that, the eye adverse reactions can be mitigated. And we also recommend, and it's mentioned in the now US prescribing information, that they see the eye doctor before for an examination and get coached and fill their eye drops. And they come in, get their infusion and their cold pack. So that's really exciting. That study did not, the phase two trial published by Robert Coleman in Lancet Oncology that led to the FDA approval on September 20th, is not a global opportunity. So we're doing the same study we did with cemiplimab, second line, tisotumab vedotin this time versus physician's choice chemotherapy. And I get it that cemiplimab did that same study, Cervical Empower 1 or GOG 3016, but that's over time. Checkpoint inhibitors are moving earlier in the line of therapy. And so that second line opportunity has to be available around the world because cervical cancer is a global cancer and obviously all patients deserve treatment. So that's a little long-winded, but it's also been both a sprint and a marathon. It's been a 2-decade journey, but most recently it sounds like a sprint because we're creating these other opportunities. I want to share with you one other thing that was presented at ESMO. So there are 3 ways to make checkpoint inhibitors, anti-PD-1 or PD-L1 better, and you know these across the treatment paradigm. One is to add it to chemotherapy and radiation, and we're certainly doing that in cervical cancer. We haven't done it yet, but the study's done. I just don't know what it shows. And then first line, we already showed you that you can add pembrolizumab to anti-angiogenic bevacizumab. Well, the third way is a dual checkpoint blockade, and you know what I'm talking about, a PD-1 CTLA-4. And there's another anti-PD-1 balstilimab that can be added to zalfrilimab, a CTLA-4 that this same manufacturer makes. And that was shown at ESMO, and when that's done again in second line, it has a response rate of 25%. So again, second line checkpoint is 14% for pembro, and maybe a little higher with cemiplimab. The confidence intervals overlap. Tisotumab is good, but maybe the best opportunity is PD-1 CTLA-4 combination. So I'm hoping to add PD-1 CTLA-4 earlier in the landscape. That's another opportunity. And there are other checkpoint inhibitors such as TIGIT. And so tiragolumab, as you know, is a great opportunity in lung cancer with atezolizumab. And that study has also been done in cervical cancer. I just don't know what the results are. So I hope to have durvalumab chemotherapy radiation soon. I hope to have second line zalfrilimab, balstilimab, PD-1 CTLA-4. And then third, I hope to have tumor infiltrating lymphocytes, lifileucel, if you can say that word, which you extract the tumor, isolate the immune cells, give fludarabine, cyclophosphamide, and then reinfuse the isolated and expanded immune cells to reprogram the immune system to kill the cancer. And at ASCO 2019, that had a 44% response rate and even some cures. So again, we're sprinting here, although it's a really long run.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Enclave on Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.enclave.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Enclave is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at Enclave and at EnclaveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at Enclave and Enclave State of the Science Summit, and follow our Onclive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Onclive on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Onclive on Air.